Live Creative Now, episode 67.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello, hello. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, author, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, which I did for way too many years, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, visual, written, musical, whatever, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive. And it's how you change the world. Oh, there are so many ways that it is a world-changing act to feed your creative hungers. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to let you know that tomorrow, as of the publication date of this episode, Thursday, July 28th, I'm holding a free online workshop called Born to Create: Why Your Creative Play is Essential, Not Self-Indulgent, which you can sign up for at freecreativityworkshop.com. That's freecreativityworkshop.com. If you have a hard time getting yourself to do the creative things that you would most love to be doing, this workshop is for you. You will learn the surprising truth about why you feel resistance to the things you love to do. You will learn how to make every creative block your friend, truly, you will. And you will learn the unexpected science of how creative play affects the brain. And I can pretty much guarantee that you will never look at creative play the same way again after I share this unexpected science with you. Last time I offered this workshop, I got a lot of amazing feedback, and one of the attendees emailed me this note. She wrote, "I am halfway through your Born to Create webinar replay, and bam! Hallelujah chorus and everything. Why in the world has it taken so long for me to hear this? The whole resistance thing? Bingo, totally makes sense. I've read the books on resistance and blah, blah, blah. They were good, but never connected this the way you have." That was from Sandy Moss, who is another creativity instigator like me. And that was just one example of how people responded to this workshop. Again, it's free and there's no sales pitch. However, if you stick around to the end, I do have a free gift for you. And yes, there will be a replay for a limited time, probably, I think it's 72 hours, I can't remember. But the link will only go to people who register. So you want to go do that. Again, that's freecreativityworkshop.com. Freecreativityworkshop.com. All right, with that out of the way, my last episode, episode 66, was all about the line between healthy commitment and unhealthy obsession, between the kind of discipline that brings rewards and the kind of discipline that sucks the joy out of your life in the attempt to be great, to achieve mastery, whatever. So if that sounds like something you could use, check out episode 66 at livecreativenow.com/066. Today, episode 67, I'm switching gears, and instead of my usual monologue, which is typically what I do for the podcast, I am sharing a conversation that I had with a fellow artist and instigator named Christine Martel. And I can't remember how I first met Christine. It was somewhere online. I don't remember where, But we got to meet in person a few times at the World Domination Summit in Portland, Oregon, which is not too far from where she lives in Hillsboro, Oregon. And sometime last year, Christine mentioned in a Facebook comment or an email or something, she mentioned that she had made, together with several collaborators, she had made an artisaur, which is a robotic dinosaur, 9 feet long, 6.5 feet tall, who serves as an arts advocate. Now, this naturally made me very curious, so I invited her to share more with me about the artisaur on the podcast. And I actually recorded our conversation almost a year ago. I'm kind of embarrassed that it's taken so long to come out, but you know, this is the reality of being a one-person operation. Sometimes stuff takes a lot longer than I'd like. Anyway, we talked about how the artisaur, or rather how artisaur, because that is the artisaur's name, artisaur, came to be, and what artisaur does in the world. And we also talked about other creative projects that Christine has worked on, how creating artisaur has impacted her creative life, and other things like keys to effective collaboration on a big creative project, and also the creative process in general. So I think you'll find it interesting. Oh, and also in the show notes, I've included some artisaur truths from the artisaur website, which is artisaur.com, artosaur.com. You can find that link in the show notes as well. So here are artisaur truths. The artisaur is here to be free of the shackles of what defines art and show us all that art is everywhere. His message is simple. Everyone can experience art. Art is accessible, immediate, magical, and unexpected. Art is valuable, and paying for art is an act of creative expression. Creative expression is everywhere, including places you might not think to look. You never know where art will turn up or what it will do for you and with you. You are as wild and creative as he is. So that definitely resonates with me. I hope it resonates with you. So let's get to my conversation with Christine Martel. So first of all, Christine, tell me, if you and I were to meet at a party or something, how would you introduce yourself? What would you say about yourself?
I guess I would say I'm, more than anything, I'm probably an advocate for creative expression. So I, you know, invent all sorts of different ways for people to interact with their creativity and, you know, have a great time with it.
So how do you do that? What are the different things that you do that get people interacting with their creativity?
Do a whole bunch of different things. I use visual images and photographs for kind of corporate training. So I do leadership development and team building and coaching and things like that in both, you know, like I say, corporations, but also nonprofits and government agencies. And I sell those tools all over the world. So that's one of the ways I do it. And then I'm very active in my community. I have a community group called Creative Hillsboro, which is the town I live in. And, you know, I do some business kinds of educational things with that, as well as having open play party kind of things on a regular basis. And then I also, my newest thing is creating an artisaur.
Yes, the artisaur. Tell me about the artisaur. What? Tell me the story of how the artisaur came about.
Well, long time ago, right after I was out of art school, I was living in Texas, and I had never been to Texas before I moved there. And I was fascinated with the land that having fossils on it. And I had never really seen fossils kind of like other than in museums. And I just thought, you know, I should have a dinosaur. I should have a dinosaur. And it was one of those things that I then stored away in the back of my mind for 30 years. And finally, this year, I just said, you know, I've always wanted a dinosaur, so I'm going to make a dinosaur.
So how did you go about making a dinosaur?
Well, it started with this. I figured I probably needed to learn to weld. So I signed up for a welding class, and I my husband's an engineer, and I thought he might be helpful in this idea of a big dinosaur. So I asked him if he would take this class with me, and he was like, well, I don't really need a beginning welding class. I don't know how to weld. He said, but I would take an advanced welding class. So I said, okay, fine. So I signed up for an advanced welding class. and you know, it was a real shock to me because I, you know, the first class, you watch all these safety videos, and I was watching all these safety videos about all the ways you can hurt yourself, and only to discover that electricity was involved. I didn't even know that. So that's how naive I was about welding. So that's where it started. It was just this idea and dragging my husband. And then he was telling a customer of his about the fact that his wife wanted to build a dinosaur. It was probably one of those, my crazy wife is doing, what's your crazy wife doing? Those kind of conversations. But anyway, this customer is the mentor, one of the mentors for the local high school's robotic team. And so then he said, you know, I bet the robotic kids would be interested in this. So then all of a sudden I'm taking a welding class and I have this robotics team who is interested in this idea. So it turned into this collaboration between me, my husband's engineering company, other, you know, local artists, and this high school robotics team. And we built an artisaur in 8 weeks.
Wow. And when did your vision change from building a dinosaur to building an artisaur?
Well, when I decided that I was going to do it, it was going to be an artisaur. Because I'm doing, I'm on the Arts Council, and we're doing this big Arts Month kind of in this fall in October. And I knew I was going to be involved in a number of the projects for that. And that we would have to bring new audience. I mean, one of the things we're working on is building audience in the community for the arts. And so I knew I had to do something outrageous. So, you know, if it was going to be a dinosaur, it had to be an artisaur because it had to serve. And, it, you know, when I do these big, crazy things that I do, it's always doing the same thing that I'm doing. So I'm a creative advocate. So what I'm doing is going to be a creative advocate also. You know, there's part of me that gets reflected in whatever it is that I'm creating on these, you know, big scale projects, community projects.
So what does the artisaur do?
Well, in his first phase, he just went out to a lot of the events this summer. So he went to the farmer's market a lot, and we have a big Celebrate Hillsboro festival, and he would go to the concerts, and he would kind of show up various places around town. And sometimes we would just drive him around on his trailer, people were like, what is this? And, you know, he has a sign that says Artisaur, finding art since 2015. And so, you know, people would see him. Oh, he went to the air show. He was in the 4th of July parade. He did a lot.
He has his own trailer.
He has a wagon that he sits on that lifts off of a trailer. And then he can roll around on his, it kind of looks like a big skateboard. And then he has his own flatbed. And we're now working on a whole enclosed trailer because now he's being invited further and he needs to go on the highway. So he needs to get encased. And also we're in Oregon and it's starting to rain. So we need to protect him.
And how big is this artisaur?
He's 6.5 feet tall and he's 9 feet long.
Wow.
Yeah,
so how does one build a an enclosed trailer. Is that like a horse trailer kind of a thing?
Yeah, it's going to be kind of a cross between the a horse trailer and the Pope Mobile. So it's going to be made out of polycarbonate, so you can see the Artosaur in it. And you know, this kind of phase, it's really handy to have engineers around because they're figuring all that part out. And, you know, we have a woodworker who's figuring that part out and, you know, so it's definitely, it becomes a collaborative process. And, you know, I'm fairly good at sculptural forms, but I'm not necessarily great at understanding the structural implications of them. So I really had to rely on the engineers to say, you can do this, you can't do that. You know, the implications of this will be that, you know.
Yeah, I'm thinking about what your meetings must have been like when you were first talking with the robotics team. So it was you and your husband at that point, and then the robotics team came on.
Yep.
So take me into that beginning stage when, you know, you first met with this robotics team. What happened?
Well, it was interesting because none of these kids had ever done anything sculptural. So they do these competitions where they build these very square looking robots that do things. So they throw balls and they throw frisbees and they compete on a national level with these very, you know, I don't know, kind of mechanical looking beasts, you know. And so I walked in with a pipe cleaner dinosaur, you know, that I had twisted together. And I said, hey, how would you like to build a dinosaur with me? And luckily, you know, a lot of kids love dinosaurs. So they were kind of open to the dinosaur idea right from the beginning, just because of that. And so basically what I did is I set up a design problem for them. So I basically said, here's what I want to do. You know, I want to, you know, promote the arts. I want to have it, you know, have community interaction. I want it to be easy for one or two people to move. You know, I want it to actually be able to go places around town and then get off of its whatever it is on and move around and move through the people. It was really important that people could interact and touch it and things like that. And so the kids right away, you know, kind of, they knew a little bit about how to approach a design problem. And so they started asking us questions about, you know, what they could do. And, it was really amazing. I mean, the first thing they wanted to do, of course, was make it move. And, you know, they, of course, are thinking Disney robotics, and we had to kind of, you know, go, okay. That would be nice. Let's make a list. And then what can high school robotics actually do in the scale of Disney robotics? And what can you do by the summer? You know, because this was in May. So, you know, we needed it for July 4th.
Wow. And we're talking in late, the last day of August. Yeah. So that's quite recent. So what does the Artosaur do physically?
Well, initially when it's phased in. So one of the things that's been kind of cool, we couldn't, of course, get it completely finished by July 4th. It was too fast. And we were in the parade that day. So what we ended up doing is we ended up going in the parade with the whole wireframe done. So we took, it was a quarter of a mile of wire that was welded together to make his skeleton. And half of him was covered with duct tape. And that's what we showed. So you could just see the basic structure. And then the kids are also really good at 3D printing. And we had one in particular who was just passionate about 3D printing. So he had printed teeth and toenails. And then the kids decided it should have a heart. So it has a, like a big beating heart. It actually isn't beating. It's a 3D printed heart, but it has LEDs and stuff inside of it that do a heartbeat. And then eventually it'll be able to be controlled. So when it sees art, it'll be able to beat faster.
That's great.
It is so cool. But even right from the very beginning, it's suspended on surgical tubing inside the beast. And so, you know, it kind of moves with the, you know, there's some flex in the exoskeleton, you know, just because of the way it's constructed. It's kind of like a big, you know, grid. And so it has a little bit of movement just from that. And so it went out that way to start with. And then it got skinned, and then it got painted. And then now, next week, last week we cut the head off of it so we can start making the head move. So there are now gears and stuff in the neck and the head so that it will be able to turn its head and move it up and down. That's what they're working on next. So we're going to a local makers fair in 2 weeks. And so hopefully by then we will be able to turn and look at people and things like that.
That is so great. Yeah. So what is your biggest vision for this Artisaur?
Oh, the gathering of the Artisaurs, of course. I want other people to make Artisaurs, and I want to be able to bring them together and do fun things with them. I can just see a whole group of them doing things. But yeah, so that's kind of, you know, in the back of my mind is that I just love people engaging with the idea. Short term, he's starting to, the question is, okay, so now that we have this Artisaur and he's becoming known around town and he's, you know, getting articles and all this other kind of stuff, what can he do? I mean, besides just be this art object. And so we're looking at interactives. So what can he teach? And so I'm working with the kids again to say, okay, what are age appropriate activities that get people engaged with this idea? So what did you learn that you can now teach younger kids? Because they're, as a robotics team, are interested in capturing the kids that are younger to get interested in robotics. And, you know, there are kids that get interested in the robotic piece, but what they've discovered is that now that they have this robotic art piece, there's all sorts of different kinds of people that are talking to them and getting interested. So it's kind of like finding, you know, it's that whole, you know, you add the A to STEM and you get STEAM, and, you know, it's a whole different possibility when you then engage with these ideas with artists in addition to the techno kids and the technologists and things like that. So that to me is really the exciting part is, you know, how can we play with those ideas with lots more people? And, you know, for me, I love makerspace and all those kinds of places that where you bring a bunch of different people together. And, you know, he may just become a mascot for something like that. I don't know, you know, just got to see kind of where the work kind of flows and moves. And, you know, I don't know, you do a big project like this and all of a sudden lots of doors open.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
What's the last big project that you did before the Artisaur?
Oh, it was probably when I started my company, the Visual Speak Company, which is, you know, we were designing tools and things for corporate and organizational use. So there was a lot of similar process in that we had an idea of what we wanted to do, and then we needed to go figure out how to do it. You know, because that's the thing about, you know, none of this stuff, you know, first we couldn't Google how to build an Artisaur. No info at that, you know, about that. And then once we started going out, we discovered all sorts of different things that we had to go kind of in for redesign. And that was very similar to when, you know, creating tools that, you know, creating visual tools 10 years ago, you know, there wasn't anything much to look at out in the marketplace. There's a lot more now. So we had to, you know, go through the same kind of design process where you're trying things and then you see what happens and you come back. Things like that.
Wow, that is just so fun. I just love that Artisaur idea. I love that you just had this idea and you said to your husband, yeah, I want to take a welding class. Will you take a beginning welding class with me? And he says, no, but I'll take an advanced welding class. And you just jump in.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pretty scared that first class, let me tell you.
But you still have all your digits, presumably.
I do. I've only had a couple burns, and yeah, I'm actually pretty comfortable with it now.
Cool. Well, what's next in your world?
What's next? Well, you know, I'm still, we are working on a new Artisaur, a little one, because, you know, the big one can only go certain places. So we're working on one called an Artivore, and Artivore will be a little bit more interactive. So, and he'll be a little more mobile so that he can dance and things a little bit. And probably he may be able to Skype with people and stuff. We're just not sure how much tech to embed in him. And then, you know, I'm always thinking of, I mean, this has just opened up all sorts of possibilities. And now that I know how to weld, I can. So
that's one of the things I really love about it, is that you had this crazy idea, something that had been ruminating for 30 years, mm-hmm. and just, you know, taking one step down that road opened up all these potential paths for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so much how it works.
It's so true. And, you know, it's that whole thing too of, you know, if I actually am going to be a creative advocate and instigator and, you know, do all the kinds of things that I do, I also have to be keeping on my creative edge. And it gets harder and harder as I get older to do that. You know, I mean, you know, it's like just sitting in a studio making a few small things just doesn't really put me on my edge anymore. So I just find myself, you know, doing less and less of my individual work, which, you know, I've been more about process than product anyway my whole career. But I'm starting to do more curation and, you know, community advocacy and things like that, just because that's what it takes for me to kind of stretch my creative muscles.
Yeah, I was just having a conversation with somebody just right before talking with you and sharing that my creative process is so much about, you know, there's a period of flailing around and feeling quite lost and then gaining some traction, a little more traction. And eventually that turns into this nice groove and I'm in this great groove and everything feels great. The world is great. And then eventually when I achieve a certain level of mastery with that, or I've just explored the avenues that I was curious about, eventually I get bored and I need something new. And then there's this period of flailing again. And at a certain point, I mean, I completely understand you needing to kind of step outside your studio in order to get that like new fix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I also think it's I feel some kind of, you know, that giving back thing, you know, the role of the mentor is becoming more important to me as I get older too. And so that's why it's been so just really satisfying to work with these young people and bring them into my creative process. You know, they stretched me, I stretched them, and, you know, it's an amazing thing when it happens that way. You know, I'm not teaching them, you know, I mean, they, you know, yeah, there were little bits and pieces that I taught them, but it was really a full collaboration. And they were fascinating to work with because they were coming at it from this very technical or, you know, oriented kind of perspective. And so they chopped up the dinosaur into body parts, and each one of them took a body part. And so they sat there with calculators and CAD programs and pen, you know, calculating, doing math about how to build this dinosaur. It was fascinating. You know, I just, you know, grab the end of the piece of wire and I start, you know, sculpting it in 3D, not them. So they presented me with kind of these structures, you know, these pieces of this dinosaur to put together. And it was a totally different approach than I ever would have taken. So that, of course, pushed me into a new understanding of a sculptural form, because I had to figure out how to work with what they had done. So, you know, in that way, it was really an amazing, amazing process.
Wow. I love that. And that's so great for somebody like me who's not the techie. I mean, I would not have been on the robotics team in high school. If
right.
school had had a robotics team, I would not have been on it. Right.
Right.
And of course I actually wouldn't have been in the art studio either, because I didn't think of myself as an artist back then.
Right.
But that is this other way of expressing yourself creatively.
Exactly. You
know, it's all solving problems, right? It's all problem solving, whether it's visual problem solving or robotics problem solving with math or whatever.
Yeah. And that was the amazing thing. And, you know, it was interesting talking to the parents of some of these kids. You know, they were saying, oh, yeah, my kid hated art. They would never touch art. And here they are. Not only are they doing an art project, but they built a 9-foot dinosaur that is purple and is running around town. You know, I mean, it's not just a little, it's not like they made a little teeny thing. You know, they did something that's really visible and, you know, is becoming this little beloved character all over, you know, all over the city. So
that is so cool. And I love how it's, how you have bridged these kind of, you know, very disparate groups that wouldn't necessarily mingle.
Yeah. And, you know, it's, you can really do that. You know, it's a thing that's, we all had common goals in some way. You know, they were really interested in being seen more in the community too. And so for different reasons, but we had some shared pieces. So I think that's a big secret too, in working in these creative projects, is to kind of find a few hooks and a few similar objectives, even if you're going to meet them in a very different way. I think that's really key to making it work.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Well, you're a huge inspiration, Christine. I love hearing about your Artisaur. Congratulations on creating that and collaborating and making that happen.
Thank you. Happy to tell you about it.
Thank you so much for taking the time to tell me about it today. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you are getting value out of this podcast, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends. And meanwhile, don't forget to sign up for tomorrow's free online workshop, Born to Create: Why Your Creative Play is Essential, Not Self-Indulgent, which you can sign up for at freecreativityworkshop.com. That's freecreativityworkshop.com. Until next time, thanks again for joining me, and go get creating!
Live creative now!
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.